freedom of speech in Central Europe was supposed to die. The man at the center of this is Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. To some, he is an unfairly maligned freedom fighter, targeted by the world's liberal elites for standing up for conservative values. To others, he is a dangerous autocrat that is slowly transforming a European democracy into a dictatorship. Which is it? We'll examine this and more in today's Trumpet World.
You're a democratically elected leader of a European nation, and it was considered controversial to interview you because your ideas were considered eccentric, and they included emphasis on the middle class and families. They included, above all, secure borders, serving your citizens before you serve foreigners. And that was all considered super radical and dangerous. And I wonder if you feel vindicated years later by watching what happened to the rest of Europe when they didn't follow those simple ideas.
So now we lost all the real attraction, what we have done previously. And Donald Trump take away all the attraction of the international politics, you know, so.
The dictator is coming.
Not the usual greeting you would expect to hear at an EU get-together.
That was a selection of clips from various times back of Viktor Orban. I think it's safe to say he's the most controversial leader in Europe right now. Welcome back to Trumpet World. This is not Mr. Richard Palmer, your normal host. I'm Mihailo Zekic. Now, Orban has been in charge of Hungary continuously since 2010. He's been Europe's longest-serving head of government so far. Now, as we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of people concerned with the direction he is taking Hungary. Some see it as a democratic backslider, somebody dissolving the rule of law, snuffing out freedom of speech, attacking religious minorities and other groups, undermining Europe's security through his relationship with Russia's Vladimir Putin. Others, meanwhile, think that a lot of these charges are overblown. They're overhyped up from the mainstream center-left media who see his standing up against, say, homosexual acceptance in schools or an open border for refugees. A lot of these traditionally strong liberal causes, and they're painting him as an evil dictator just to jab at that. The Hungarian parliament was scheduled to pass a bill that would basically create a blacklist for different NGOs and other organizations from receiving foreign funding. The bill's supporters claimed this would have went against foreign interference in Hungary's internal matters and its political systems, while critics say that this was just a power grab from the Orban government to silence dissenting voices. Now, the bill's debate has since been postponed for several months now. But supposing it were to pass, supposing you lived in Hungary right now and had to deal with how the government does things, what society is like right now, what is it like in Hungary on the ground? And what is it like for one of these groups that this bill would have impacted? Well, earlier this week, we spoke with Csaba Lukács. We spoke to him about media freedom, the war in Ukraine, and a lot more.
My name is Csaba Lukács. I'm a journalist from 1992, and now I am owning and running a weekly newspaper called Magyar Hang, which means Hungarian voice. We are the only conservative newspaper in Hungary which is not belongs to the state propaganda. So that's the reason why we are really hated by the government. So nobody is brave enough to print our newspaper in Hungary. We are producing in Slovakia, and our journalists are not allowed to go to the governmental press conferences, and we are not getting answers from the governmental officials. So literally we are banned from any kind of information. Even the multinational companies are not brave enough to spend advertising on our newspaper, so we are running exclusively on readers' money. Hopefully, and thanks for them, we have enough readers to keep alive our project. So we have a weekly newspaper with around 12,000 copies sold by each week. We have a really strong YouTube channel now, which had more than 20 million views per year. So it's profitable, the YouTube leg of our production. We have obviously a website, and we have a book publishing house, which was published more than 9 books since we started. And one of our book was a totally hit. It's about Orban. So it's an Orban biography written by a half Hungarian, half Italian historian. And we sold around 20,000 copies of that, which is a really good number in a country of 9 million people.
So Prime Minister Viktor Orban, he has been in power in Hungary since 2010. That's a long time ago. And there's been a lot of changes happening in Hungarian society. From your perspective as a journalist who's been a journalist before Orban came into power and now all these time after, how has the freedom of the press and freedom of information, how has that been changed in Hungary?
So Orban had a first term even before the 2010. So he's ruling the country almost more than 20 years. So there are some youngsters who weren't born when Orban started and now they can vote. So we are getting step by step closer to Russia. We are not in Turkey yet, so the journalist probably will be not in jail yet. And we will not falling out from windows as it happens in Moscow. But it's getting harder and harder to get information. It's getting harder and harder to survive. So the advertising market is totally controlled by the government. They are putting new rules for journalists how to work. So everything became centralized. Like 10 years ago, if we sent a reporter to countryside or newspaper, it's trying to give a voice for those who are living in small rural areas. So there is a rule that in every issue of our newspaper, we should publish at least 3 reports from countryside. And 10 or 15 years ago, if we sent a reporter there, it was really easy and they were happy to share their problems. The school's principal in a rural community, the medical doctor, the police chief, the priest, those who were involved in social care. So they were happy that somebody is interested in their problems and they were sharing it. Now, if we are going to the countryside, the school's principal is asking, do you have the permission of Ministry of Interior? Because in Hungary, we don't have any more Ministry of Culture and Schools. It's under Ministry of Interior and they need a permit from the minister. If we are going to a medic to ask what is the situation in their field, they are asking us, do you have the permission of Ministry of Interior? Because we don't have Ministry of Health. It's under Ministry of Interior and they need a permit from them to take a statement. Obviously, the police station leader is saying that the same questions, that do you have the permit from the center? And even in a social care institute, they are asking for the permit of Ministry of Interior because we have no anymore Ministry of Social Cares. It's under the Ministry of Interior. So everything is totally centralized. Even the local priests are asking, do you have the permission from the bishop? Because they are afraid that they will be punished if they are saying something which is not fit in the governmental propaganda. So almost impossible to get information. It's really hard to get even that public procurement informations because they are trying to delay the terms for that. So in this moment, it takes like 90 days to get an official answer if you are asking something from a governmental office. And also, people are afraid to talk. So probably they think that they will be punished or they will have some, you know, disadvantage if they are publicly appearing in an independent newspaper. So nowadays, it's really hard to get proper information from even the people.
with what you're saying, is you even have to go through government permission just to have the ability to ask people basic questions, in other words.
Yeah, true. And also, we have to be creative. So we were trying to find new ways how to show that how rich became those people who are close to the government or in the government. So we were buying drones to show their properties. They immediately made a new law that it's almost impossible to fly over with a drone to somebody's properties who belongs to the government. So they are trying to get harder and harder the journalist's life. We are living in Hungary since more than 10 years in an emergency situation. They are extending that emergency situation year by year. They started with emergency on migration. Later on, it was COVID emergency. Now it's war emergency because we have a war in our neighbor country in Ukraine. So we are living in a constantly emergency situation, which allows to govern, to rule without parliamentary permission. They can issue decrees, governmental decrees. There is no debate on parliament, and they can issue, or referring to the emergency situation, they can restrict the journalist work as well. So they are really creative how to stop working the independent journalists.
So for 10 years, the actual emergency has been different, but the state of the government has always been the same, just looking for a different excuse then.
Yeah. They are finding an excuse how to put those people who are not fitting in their strategy in a boxes where it's really hard to get out. And obviously we can respect the law, so we could not do anything illegal because the punishment will come immediately.
Now, last time we talked, you spoke a lot about the previous newspaper you worked for, Magyar Nemzet. Could you go into a bit of detail for our viewers on what exactly happened there and how you ended up in Magyar Hang today?
Yep. So in the last 10 years, the media landscape in Hungary was totally changed. They closed the biggest independent daily newspaper. First one which was closed, it was Népszabadság, the leftish newspaper. Later on, it was closed Magyar Nemzet, the conservative daily newspaper, which I was working for. And it at that moment, there were fired more than 100 journalists. So we realized that we don't have a future without doing something. So we started to establish the new weekly newspaper from scratch. In the first 3 months, nobody was getting a salary, and we were selling our newspapers on the street to have cash to pay the printing costs. That was one of the most intensive emotional period in my journalist life. I would suggest even for every journalist in US to try to sell your products on the street. That would be a lifetime experiment. Some people were, obviously, they were laughing on us, they were saying bad words, but we get a lot of emotional things. So some readers were crying, they were paying 10 times more money to our newspaper. So that was a really emotional period. And we became successful. So our newspaper now is the second largest, has the second largest circulation in Hungary. We started with 25 people. Now we are hiring more than 40. So we could grow it, and thanks to the readers are more and more people who are buying us. But during that time, the whole media landscape was totally changed. The governmental party made a new foundation. It's called Central European Media Foundation, and they bought out or captured more than 500 media outlets. So in that foundation, it's put more than 500 different media outlets like TV stations, radio stations, web portals, print newspapers, daily countryside newspapers, all kind of media. And they are spreading pure governmental propaganda. So if there is a misspell in a sentence, even that it's not corrected. So they have no right to correct even the misspells. So sometimes there are quite funny things that in 40 web pages you can find the same content in different web pages. So it's a very well built governmental propaganda. And it's quite efficient. So the ruling party, the Fidesz, won 3 times 2/3 majority in the parliament. So it works very well. It's efficient. But nowadays we can say that probably that's the end of Orbán era in Hungary, because 1 year ago was showing up a new party. It's called Tisza from the river. And now they lead on polls with 9%. So it could happen that in the next year elections in April, Fidesz will lose the power. But obviously there is a question if the Putin will interfere in the Hungarian elections, or if the government will take the elections, because we are in an emergency situation. So they can say that in an emergency situation, there is no condition to take the elections, and they can prolong it.
Yeah, we'll get to the elections a little bit later. I think just to give a little context, with Majd Nemzet, last time we talked, you had a few details about why it was dissolved and how the owner of the paper had a falling out with Orbán and everything trickled down from there. Could you elaborate a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Magyar Nemzet was belonged to an oligarch called Simicska Lajos, who was a really close friend, old friend of Orbán, but they split. Nobody knows the reason why. And he was totally departing from Fidesz. And since then, all his media assets and other assets were under the attack. And after the elections in 2018, Simicska was giving up, and he was saying that he will stop operating all his media assets or giving back to Orbán. So that was the reason why he closed Magyar Nemzet. And like 2 years later, the Magyar Nemzet was restarted. So probably Simicska was giving up for Orbán, for another Orbán oligarch, the right to publish this newspaper. And now Magyar Nemzet, unfortunately, in our term, it's running again, full with governmental propaganda. So for us, it's a shame to read those newspapers who, for what I was working for 20 years, and doing totally against real journalism. So they are making smear campaign, they are publishing lies. They are in the top of those media organizations in Hungary who are losing the most case on the trials, because they are publishing lies. But probably that's in their business model. So the taxpayers are giving them so much money through the government that they don't care if they are losing trials on lies. They can pay from the government money.
Yeah, so with everything you've told me, I mean, Hungary is technically still a democracy. It's in the European Union, it's in NATO. This does not sound like the usual kind of actions most governments in the so-called Western democracies take. But at the same time, we have a clip here from 2018 when Orbán was speaking in front of the European Union when the EU was about to, or the parliament there, when the EU was about to put sanctions on Hungary. So hearing that was obviously several years ago. The government still maintains that everything is normal, that they're unfairly being attacked by all these big bureaucrats everywhere. And there's plenty of people around the world, they hear that language and they think there is actually something to that Orbán is actually right. How has he been able to, doing everything you just said, still be able to keep this appearance going on that everything's normal?
Couple of years ago, more than 10 years ago, Orbán hired an American PR consultant called Flinkenstein, who is really, really good and really strong on hate speech. And he learned probably Orbán how to make enemies. So since then, we are living in a Hungary where we have enemies, and they are causing all problems in Hungary. So Orbán learned that you should find somebody to blame. And if you have a huge propaganda behind you, you can make the people believe that they are our enemies and all our problems are made by them. So we started to hate migrants, or the Hungarians started to hate migrants for first. Later on, the LGBT community, the homeless people, the Roma people, Brussels, Soros, George Soros, the American billionaire with Hungarian roots, are one of the most hated enemy now in Hungary. He was giving for Orban and all his government subsidies, and he was financing the Orban University lectures in Oxford, but that was totally forgotten, and now we are threatening him as the biggest enemy of Hungary. So even today, if I'm going out to the street, I can see billboards when the governmental officials are saying that our biggest enemies at this moment are the Ukrainians, which is really ridiculous, and Brussels. So we can see billboards with Ursula von der Leyen, Manfred Weber, and Zelensky on billboards as the biggest enemies of Hungary. So Orban learned how to win the elections, making enemies who are far enough to be not defeated, but the people can blame them for all their problems. And that's how those illiberal politicians everywhere in the world are working, and they are teaching each other. So I am sure that Orban was teach the Trump campaign staff how to do this. And he probably was learning from Putin or Erdogan. And those politicians are sharing the best practices how to make the people vote for them on these populist topics, to make fake enemies, and later on promise them that, okay, we will protect you from those enemies, which was created by themselves. So I can see what is happening in America now. It was happened in Hungary a couple of years before. So we can see how Trump is adjusting the Orban's inventions on politics in American domestic politics as well.
Yeah, speaking of, you mentioned a few things there like Ukraine and targeting enemies. I wanted to ask you about a few specific issues that obviously Hungary has been very controversial with. On 2022, that was when the last parliamentary election happened. As you mentioned, they won a supermajority. And I remember covering that back then, and there were stories of electoral fraud and manipulating the electoral mechanisms so the opposition parties couldn't get voted in. Back then, what was it like covering the election as an opposition paper?
As I told you, we have no access to the public data, and that's our daily life. So during the elections, there are no special rules. And I have to say that probably they don't need to cheat on elections day, because everything is built up in that way that the people will go and vote for them. So they are focusing on countryside, elderly people, poor ones. They are promising them a better future, or they are promising them that they will protect them from migrants or from George Soros or from other fake enemies. And the people will go and they will vote for Orban. As in the last election, I was, as a volunteer, I was like an observer for oppositional party in the elections. And I could see that the people were coming extremely well mobilized to vote for Fidesz, even if they didn't knew who is the Fidesz. So the government party is really good on mobilization. And they have money to organize that, and they gerrymander the elections borders in that way that in Budapest, obviously, it's a multicultural liberal city, but it's not enough. They know that they have to bring the countryside people for vote, and they can vote, they can win the election with their vote as well. So we have 2 million people in Budapest. It's not enough against 7 million who are living in countryside. And also, they are not organizing in a good way to vote for those youngsters who went to Western Europe. So if you are living in Western Europe and you have Hungarian citizenship, it's really hard to vote because there is no possibility for mail voting. You should go in an embassy. But if you live in Germany, there is only one place or two places where to vote. So there are really long queues. Only the election days you can go there. So they are interested to keep them away from polling stations. And they are focusing on countryside people who can be influenced by their propaganda. So I'm not sure that Orban has to cheat on elections. With mobilization and with propaganda, they can win without cheating.
Mm-hmm. And going to, you mentioned Zelensky and Ukraine. That was my next question. Obviously, Hungary is a neighbor of Ukraine, but it is not a combatant. It's not involved in the war, even though there's a state of emergency. War is obviously a very sensitive subject. Has there been any pressure? Like you said, there's no new rules for this or that, but I can imagine there are some subjects that are more sensitive to the government than others, like how Orban has embraced Putin. Has there been any particular topics, especially surrounding the war, that has gotten Majarhang or any other groups in more serious scrutiny?
There is one question which now it's really urgent and it could change everything. One Monday evening in May, just 2 minutes before midnight, a member of parliament representing the ruling Fidesz party submitted a draft transparency bill to the Hungarian parliament. And the proposal was quickly debated by the parliament and it was expected to be passed tomorrow. The vote was unexpectedly postponed until autumn, so nobody knows why, but the threat exists. In that bill, they are saying that every media organization and every civil organization and even company could be punished if they are spreading Ukrainian, pro-Ukrainian propaganda. They are saying that every media company can be punished if they are threatening the Hungarian national sovereignty, but it's not mentioned what does it mean exactly. They are saying that the media and even the civil organization can be punished if they are trying to influence the voters, which is also like a rubber thing. If you are publishing an article about, I don't know, the roads are not in very, very bad conditions in Hungary, it could be influence the voters. And also they are saying that if you are not respecting the basic Christian values, it also seems to be a bullshit. What are the basic Christian values? If you are spreading LGBT propaganda, you should be on target. Which means that 1 year ago, they established a new office. It's called the Hungarian Sovereignty Office. And that office will make a list of those organizations who are against national sovereignty. So they are deciding who is their enemy, who is not. And those organizations who will be on their list, they will be not allowed to receive any money from abroad, which means that all our YouTube advertising money will gone because we are receiving the YouTube money through an Irish company of Google. And obviously, if somebody wants to make a subscription from abroad, it will be totally illegal. And if we are receiving even EU money, it would be illegal. And we have to pay back 25 times more amount which was received initially. So if that bill will be passed, that could be the end of independent media in Hungary and also the NGOs' life, because some of NGOs are receiving donation or grants from EU as well. So that's a really big change. It's totally against EU law, obviously. And also, EU had some issues with that, but I am sure that they will pass because they want to win the elections.
Speaking of the European Union, that leads nicely into my next question. Much of this stuff, again, is not something you would expect in a normal Western democracy. The European Union has pushed against Orban for years with a lot of strong words and a lot of threats, but not many of those threats have actually been carried out. There hasn't really been much punishment against him. Why has the European Union been dragging its feet with this?
I think Orban learned how to cheat the democracy and how to cheat the European Union. So it's true that European Union, it's a huge bureaucratic organization, and they thought that they can moderate Orban. And unfortunately, they failed. Now there are some sanctions against Hungary, so we are not receiving any more EU money, but it was not enough. And we could clearly see that Orban is the Trojan horse of Putin in EU, in NATO. So Orban trying to block any kind of sanctions, which is against Russia made by EU. And also they are trying the NATO decisions to block the NATO decisions to how to help Ukraine. So Orban is obviously playing from Putin cards, and EU doesn't find yet the solutions against this kind of black ships. They are working on it, so they are making the Union of Willings, who it's obviously made in that way to avoid Orban vetoes, and they will try to find all legal solutions to avoid the Hungarian objections on those cases, but they are moving so slow and not efficient that Orban can misuse it. We don't know what's happened with Orban, because he was anti-Russian and anti-Putin before, but he totally changed his mind. And we could see that it's what is he doing, it's totally for Putin interest. And also Hungary was an anti-Russian and anti-Putin country, but thanks to their propaganda, the Fidesz voters became pro-Russian and they hate Ukraine, which is a totally shame. In the Hungarian propaganda media, there is not mentioned that Ukraine was attacked by Russia, and they are saying that Ukraine started the war. They are blaming that Ukraine doesn't want a peace. And they are not saying that the peace could be quite easily done if Putin will decide to get out Russian soldiers from Ukrainian field, there will be peace. But in the Hungarian propaganda, there is no mentioning about this topic. If we are writing that we should help Ukrainians to get more army to defend themselves, we are blamed as Ukrainian propagandists, and we can be punished now. So that's the really important case. If you are showing the minimal sign of solidarity and human being, we could be punished. If you are saying that, okay, we should help Russia to defeat Ukraine, that would be okay for the government, which is totally ununderstandable why they are doing this. Probably Orban is blackmailed by something from Putin, or I could not imagine other things behind that, because he was like 20 years ago, he was a pro-Western, anti-Russian politician, and he totally changed his mind.
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier about the new challenge to Orban coming up in this upcoming election. Of Péter Magyar and his party, they were able to do much better than expected in the European Parliament elections. Like you said, a lot of people are hopeful he could unseat Orban. Is it realistic that we could see Fidesz lose power next year?
We could see that the things are changing really fast in Hungary. Obviously, the economical situation helps that opposition party. So since Orban could gave us a lot of money for poor people, they will vote for him. But now we have the highest inflation in EU since 2 years ago. The Hungarian GDP is going down, and we have some serious economical issues. In that condition, that Tisza party growing, it's inevitable. So we could see that the trends are the same, that Fidesz is going down, the governmental party, and the oppositional, that opposition one, the new opposition is going up. And also he is cannibalizing the old opposition as well, because probably the people realize that, okay, they were trying three times, they had no success, so now we have to vote for the new opposition, which is totally a new kind of. So even Peter Magyar is saying that he doesn't want to have coalition because even the old opposition parties are corrupted by the Fidesz. So Hungary has to step in a totally new way. And it seems that it works. So what was going, what was successful for the government, for the governmental propaganda before that, they started the smear campaign against the new leaders, and they started to lie about them, and it was working because their popularity immediately started to descend. Now it's not working against Magyar Péter, and nobody knows why. So those tools, those propagandistic tools and advertising skills, which was learned by Fidesz before, it's not working now. Probably because the people are feeling totally enough with Fidesz, and they want a real change. So that could be a historical time for Hungary now or this year to make a new restart of the country. But we don't know if Putin will allow that for Hungary or not. We could see what's happened in Romania. In 3 months, they build up a new politicians in last year that George Călinescu, who was a nobody before, and he won, thanks to the TikTok, the first round of elections. Fortunately, the Hungarian, the Romanian politicians were clever enough to ban him from the elections, and they repeated the presidential elections. But we could clearly see that the Russian interference can make a huge difference on elections. And we are waiting for that the Russian trolls, and even Orban started to organize a troll army. It's called Fighters Club, and they are trying to recruiting 100,000 people who will invade the whole social media in Hungary, and they will spread pure governmental propaganda. So we could see that Orban doesn't want to give up, and they will try their best with help of Putin to win the elections. But nowadays we could see that there is a real chance that Tiso party can defeat Fidesz. It's a question of future, what will happen. We have around 10 months to election, if will be elections in Hungary. So everything can change, but the trend are showing that the Tiso party is going up and the governmental parties are going down at this moment.
Okay, and with the Tisza party and Peter Magyar, I mean, he used to belong to Fidesz. He used to be a longtime insider. He was married to the former justice minister. Even if he comes into power, does it look like that he actually would change anything?
I believe that he would change. And also, there is a question that I'm not in charge to judge that, but Hungary became a conservative country. So without splitting the conservative forces, you could not win elections. So that's the reason why Magyar Péter is quite successful. He can address for those people who were voting for Fidesz but became disappointed. That's also our strategy. So my newspaper, Hungarian Voice, is focusing on, as we call them, Fidesz orphans, who are still conservative, but they think that Orban is going in a wrong way. So the Magyar Péter strategy is to depart from old opposition and from Fidesz in the same time, and it could be successful. Nobody knows what he will do when he will be on the power, obviously, but he probably realized that he should punish those oligarchs and those politicians who became extremely rich in the last 20 years. And he had to cut off all kind of those anti-democratic and anti-market things which was built up by Fidesz to rule the whole country. So probably Magyar Péter could not continue what Fidesz did because the voters will be against him immediately. So most of the voters want change in Hungary. And if you win the elections, you cannot do the totally opposite after you won the elections.
A couple more questions. Going back to 2022, that was also the year when the European Parliament gave a report about the use of Pegasus and other spyware in many countries in Europe, and Hungary was one of the biggest offenders in that, with them using spyware to tap people's private messages, etc. Is that still an issue today?
Be assured that our telephones are watched. The Secret Service, it's against us. In December, I was put under a lie detector test by the Hungarian Secret Service with two of my colleagues. We made a mistake. We were publishing a news, which later on became, we realized that it's not true. We were recalling the news in 3 hours and we were apologized. But from that moment, the governmental propaganda started a hate campaign, a smear and hate campaign against us. And the government ordered the Institution of Protection of Constitution, which is literally the Hungarian Secret Service, to start an investigation. So we were called by them. They put us under a lie detector test. They put quite private questions, but I could not talk about questions because they said that everything is classified. We don't know the results, but yes, that was the first time in Hungarian history when three journalists were put under the lie detector test by the government. So they are trying to intimidate us. They are suing us as many times as possible. So there are slaps in Hungarian field. We are receiving emails, threatenings from ordinary people. And we were called by the Prime Minister Bux. I don't know if you remember, Orban Viktor had a speech on national holiday on 15th of March. And he was saying, I tried to say that correctly, that he was saying that all independent journalists, civil society activists, and judges are bugs, and a big Eastern cleanup is coming, and they will clean the country from those bugs. Which is literally unexpected from a prime minister. So we could see that they will not stepping back. They are trying to threaten everybody who is against them. And that phenomenon will not stop until elections.
Now, looking forward for the future, I mean, other countries have followed one degree or another the Orban model, you could say. Slovakia is a bit infamous with their prime minister, Robert Fico. Greece has been implicated in using the spyware quite a bit as well. From the perspective of somebody that grew up under communism, that knows what a dictatorship is like, that knows what how everyone was expecting freedom afterwards, and now we're seeing people go back the other direction a little bit. What do you think the future for free press, for independent journalism in Europe is going to look like?
You know, I was born in Romania during the Ceausescu regime, and I thought that I got the worst experiments ever. Later on, I was visiting North Korea 4 times, and I could realize that there are much worse situations. So now in Hungary, the situation is not so bad as was in Ceausescu regime or as is in North Korea. But unfortunately, we are getting step by step closer. And those illiberal politicians or populist politicians are learning each other and sharing the best practices, how to punish the independent press and all those people who are against them. So I am expecting that the situation, even in whole Europe or in whole world, will be worse and worse. So unfortunately, democracy is so vulnerable. And those people who learned how to cheat the democracy, they have an advantage. So we have to find a way how to defeat the democracy in a democratic way. And that's really hard issue because the other ones are not respecting the rules, but you should defeat them with respecting the rules. And it's not easy. And to be honest, I don't know the solutions yet. And I'm expecting that in every country, the situation is getting worse and worse day by day, where those illiberals or populists are in power.
That's about all the questions I had. Thank you very much for agreeing to speak with us. I hope everything works out with everything going on in Hungary. And köszönöm szépen, et viszontlátásra.
Köszönöm szépen. Thank you very much and see you.
That was, again, Csaba Lukács with Magyar Hang. Thanks again to him and the organization for helping organize the interview. I do think it's interesting that in the middle of the interview there, you noticed he mentioned that Viktor Orban and everything he's doing and the trends he is setting, that other authoritarians are copying those that pathway to power. And he labeled United States President Donald Trump there among them. Now, this is something I think I can feel free to agree to disagree with him on. If anybody's followed this program or our sister program, The Trump Daily, for quite some time, you know, we don't think President Trump is a dictator. He's not a dictator. He was voted in democratically and he was voted out democratically. And his opposition has been pulling a lot of undemocratic moves, unconstitutional moves to block him from power. We have plenty of literature on our website that can go into that in a little more detail. But that doesn't mean that the two leaders don't have a soft spot for each other, that they don't depend on each other politically. Viktor Orban, he hosts an annual conference sponsored by the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, in Budapest every year. It's the only annual conference CPAC has in Europe. And President Trump sent a video message to start things off there. Here's an excerpt from that.
I want to congratulate Miklos Szentho and Matt Schlapp on the great job you do with CPAC Hungary. You know how I feel about Hungary and you know how I feel about CPAC. I really respect and love them both. I also want to pay a very special regard to the leader of Hungary, Viktor Orban, who's a great man and highly respected by everybody. He's done a brilliant job of leading, and he's a very, very special person.
That was, again, for the CPAC conference in Budapest. President Trump has sent similar messages to that in CPAC's prior conferences there. Now, there is evidence to suggest that the relationship between the two men isn't all rosy. Do you hear about some of the stuff we talked about with Mr. Lukács? Did you hear about the suppression of the media needing to go to the Ministry of the Interior to speak to school employees and hospital workers? Do you hear about the targeting of political opponents? Do you hear about the mass wiretapping, the kind of things that normally they associate with the radical leftist deep state? How many conservative publications talk about this transformation that's happening in the heart of supposedly free and democratic Europe? Is it because Viktor Orban is just that much of a skilled communicator and they've been bought into his propaganda machine? Or are these things only bad when it's the Democrats that do it? Now, on a predecessor program, Trumpet Hour, we've even had an interview with the leader of a Methodist church there that has been having literal religious persecution against him by the Orban government. We could put a link to our show notes. Like, how many people are talking about that? Orban, it doesn't take much to scratch the surface and to get away from some of these talking points he puts out on the air, or this conservative veneer he builds up for the world to see. Viktor Orban is not pro-free speech. He is not pro-religious freedom. He only supports variants of these things as long as they toe his government line. And whether some of these figures in media, in politics, in the United States and elsewhere realize it or not, by giving Viktor Orban all these positive press, by making what's going on in Hungary look like, oh, it's just another slander from the deep state, they are actively covering up Hungary's fundamental transformation of its own. They're acting as a smokescreen for what is really a reversion into a dictatorship. Now, why are we talking about this on Trumpet World with this small country in particular? I mean, Hungary is a small country. It is no longer part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It is not a world power anymore. Is Hungary, what's going on in that country, really that big of a threat to what everybody else has to deal with in the rest of the world? Well, we at the Trumpet, of course, analyze world events in the light of Bible prophecy, and the Bible has a lot to say about world empires and the rise and fall of regimes from the time the Bible was written, from ancient times all the way to present day. Daniel 2 talks about I'll just summarize it, a great statue made up of four metals, and they represented successfully Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Daniel 7 talks about four wild beasts coming out of the ocean that represent the same empires, these same world-ruling empires that specifically had control over the Holy Land. But the story with Daniel's empires doesn't just end with ancient Rome. It doesn't end 2,000 years ago. You can continue the story flow from the Old Testament into the New Testament and look at the book of Revelation in Chapter 13, you have another beast coming out of the sea that, like the fourth beast in Daniel, has seven heads and 10 horns. It represents the same empire. It is the Roman Empire. And that carries on to a prophecy in Revelation 17, further down in the book, that again talks about a beast, verse 3, with seven heads and 10 horns. This is, again, about the Roman Empire. But it's not even really about the Roman Empire of the ancient world. The chapter points out that this empire is ridden by a woman, which is a biblical symbol of a church. Verse 14 shows it to be on the scene at Christ's second coming, a yet future event. This is not talking about ancient Rome. This is talking about the resurrection of that old empire, what a lot of history books would call the Holy Roman Empire. And there's an important detail that is mentioned in verses 9 to 10. I'll read those. Quote, "And here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space." End quote. Now, a mountain, you could look at passages like Isaiah 2. It shows that to be a symbol of government. And so it shows that this empire ridden by a church, guided by a church, is to have seven distinct phases, you could say, seven rises and falls, seven resurrections that are consecutive, one after the other. And you could look, again, through the history books and see men like Charlemagne, men like Napoleon Bonaparte even, that were controlling that empire, that were ruling that empire, that were causing a lot of destruction and mayhem through that empire, and were guided by religion. The last one, the sixth resurrection, the one that is, according to the prophecy, would have been the Third Reich, as led by Adolf Hitler. And if you'd like to learn more about this history and how it ties in with Bible prophecy, we have a free book, The Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy, that can dive into that in much, much more detail in each of the resurrections. I highly recommend you look at that if you haven't done that yet. We are expecting one more rising of this beast, rising of this devastating empire. And at the last resurrection of this empire, Revelation 17 brings out an interesting detail. It's recorded in verses 12 through 14. Quote, "And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them." End quote. The 10 horns, those represent, in this final resurrection, 10 sub-kings, you could say, 10 separate countries that are going to pool their resources together and form this giant superstate, form this united European empire. Herbert W. Armstrong, the editor-in-chief of our predecessor institution, The Plain Truth, was watching this to happen. Here is a clip from him from a 1982 World Tomorrow program.
"And after that would come another, the fourth kingdom, strong as iron. represented by the legs, the Roman Empire. And it would carry on clear down to our time. Now, the Roman Empire is yet to be revived, and that will happen very soon in Europe. And apparently, part of it in Eastern Europe and part in Western Europe, where the old ancient Roman Empire was, by 10 nations, which are the 10 toes, they're going together, and they are going to fight Christ that is coming. Now, this shows Gentile world ruling governments that have been ruling the world politically and representing all of the world ruling governments from 600 years before Christ down to our time today. And we're coming into that very time. Now, other things are revealed in these prophecies that are immediately to happen, but it does get down to our time today. And it's very time that very important that we understand these things, or you don't know what is going to happen.
And I think that visualization gives a pretty clear view. He's referencing there Daniel 2. It talks about the Holy Roman Empire as being the 10 toes. Again, there's a number 10. Being on two separate legs, and because it's divided 50-50, Mr. Armstrong expected five of these kings, these dictators, these strongmen to come from Western Europe and five from Eastern Europe. That was when Eastern Europe, most of it at least, was under communism, was under the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. And because of the prophecies like in Daniel and Revelation, Mr. Armstrong expected a lot of these smaller Eastern European countries to break away from communism, to break away from the Russian orbit. This is what he wrote in 1955, quote, "Some of the Balkan nations are going to tear away from behind the Iron Curtain. Russia has lost already, to all appearances, Tito's Yugoslavia. Russia probably will lose still more of her Eastern European satellites." 1957, he writes, "When the right psychological moment arrives, a number of these Eastern European nations will break away from Moscow. The Iron Curtain fell, communism collapsed, and Eastern Europe is now today united with Western Europe in the EU. They have a common foreign policy, they have a common security pact, they have a common flag, a common anthem. Most of the area has a common currency. There's a common trade bloc as well." But Mr. Armstrong didn't just forecast that Eastern Europe would fall away from Russia. He also forecast that this seventh resurrection would come in the spirit of the one that came before it, of the Third Reich, as well as the other ones previously. And when you listen to some of the things Mr. Lukács said about what Prime Minister Orbán has been doing to Hungary, perpetual states of emergency, snuffing out the media, rallying the whole population to fight invisible enemies, that sounds a lot like the techniques and even rhetoric that the Nazis used. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury wrote in our July 2020 print edition regarding Viktor Orbán, quote, "European leaders are increasingly behaving like dictators and assuming dictatorial power. The people of Europe are being conditioned to accept more tyrannical leadership," end quote. Now, this was during COVID. This was when, I guess you could say it's the most blatant example of countries, not just in Hungary, obviously, but throughout the West, having more tyrannical leadership. But the same leadership is still in power in Budapest today. Maybe it doesn't look as heavy-handed as when people were forced to stay inside or wear a mask or whatever, but it's still the same government with similar policies in a similar vein. And as you heard, the state of emergency even hasn't actually ended. It just shifts from one excuse to another. Mr. Fleury further wrote in that article, quote, "Is the acceptance of Orbán's dictatorship in the EU a sign that the time has come for Europe's 10 kings to emerge? It is almost certain that Hungary will be part of the coming 10-nation European superpower," end quote. Now, you can't read those words. Read those words from years ago and listen to what Mr. Lukács said. Look at your nightly news about what's going on in Hungary, and it just sends chills up your spine. That is exactly what is happening. Hungary is turning into a dictatorship, and as I asked Mr. Lukács there, you're seeing other countries in Europe want to follow the same model. It doesn't look like a bright future. Now, one little caveat, Mr. Fleury has never said that he expects Viktor Orban himself to be the man, to be the king. He has never specifically said that he fulfills this prophecy, and there are reasons to think maybe he is not the actual king. He doesn't necessarily get along with the rest of the bloc, and Peter Magyar, for his part, he comes from the same party as Orban. He looks a little bit interesting. We'll have to see what happens next year. But it's still undeniable that he is building a dictatorship, a kingship, if you will, in the heart of Europe. A Europe supposedly learning its lessons from the Nazis, from communism, and turning its back away from dictatorship and tyranny and oppression. And many of his people, many Hungarians, like it that way. You could even get a sense of it for why some of the reasons this new opposition party is getting so popular. It's not necessarily about the all the rhetoric that Orban is saying, or his getting closer to Russia, or this or that. It's about standard of living and falling economy and corruption. Whereas Tisza, the new party, stands for a lot of the things that Orban already stands for, but claiming that they'll do away with all these other aspects that's making everybody's lives miserable. And you could look at Hungary's culture, Hungary's government today, and you could see it's still in the same spirit, or at least in a similar vein, to some of those earlier resurrections of the Holy Roman Empire. Hungary, for its part, it used to be part of the Habsburg Empire. It was the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was one of the halves of that empire. And the Habsburgs, before it ruled that empire, it ruled over the Holy Roman Empire at large. It was one of those resurrections. And Prime Minister Orban has embraced that Habsburg heritage. Eduard Habsburg Lothringen, who is a descendant of the Habsburg Emperor Franz Josef, he is Orban's ambassador to the Vatican. And Viktor Orban, for his part, has maintained having close relationships with the Vatican as a huge foreign policy priority. He had great relations with Pope Francis, even though those two were on the ideological opposite ends of the spectrum, in many respects. And Hungary was also, in World War II, was a Nazi ally. They had a dictator there, Miklos Horthy, who sided with Hitler, who declared war against the Allies, and who was responsible for the deaths of thousands of Jews. Now, we could put on the side here, these pictures here, these are busts of Miklos Horthy that have been put up by different Hungarian far-right groups ever since Orban got power in 2010. One of these busts is put right next to the Hungarian Parliament building. There's plenty of people in Hungary that still want to revive those roots, that still want this heritage glorified, that there's plenty of people that want Hungary to go full steam ahead with reviving the Holy Roman Empire. Now, other prophecies, you could look at Matthew 24 and the rest of the book of Daniel, and you show that this is not just one powerful super country coming together. This is going to cause devastation throughout the whole world. The rise of the Holy Roman Empire should be of everyone's concern, should send chills up everyone's spines in every part of the world. So when you see countries like Hungary doing these things, and perhaps even most surprisingly supported and screened by people in the media in America and other places that should know better, that should really set off alarm bells with people. There is good news, though, with all this. Revelation 17 doesn't just talk about all the devastation and destruction this empire is going to do. The end of it all is described in verse 14, quote, These 10 kings shall make war with the Lamb, or Jesus Christ, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful, end quote. And there are many other scriptures that show that when it looks like all hope is lost, Christ is going to come back and put a stop to it. It ends with the second coming. It ends with this empire being banished, being destroyed forever, and leading into the happy millennial utopian rule of the kingdom of God. But with that being said, before that happens, there is bad news, very bad news, before the good news. And you can't be ignorant of what is coming. You can't be ignorant of what is happening in the heart of Europe right now, even if men like Prime Minister Orban have seemingly righteous, seemingly Christian veneers. If you would like to learn more about this, the two resources I could recommend to you, I mentioned the Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy, that gives a good overview of what this empire is from beginning to end, what the Bible says about it, and what's coming in the future. And if you'd like to learn more about Hungary in particular, last year's January's print edition, we had an article in there called Make Hungary Great Again that puts Viktor Orban's Hungary into a bit of context as to why, say, conservatives around the world love him and what they're missing from what he's doing. Well, that's about all the time we have for today. Thank you very much to Csaba Lukács and Magyar Hang for agreeing to the interview. Thank you to Mr. Richard Palmer for allowing me to guest host for you today. Thank you to George Haddad and Victor Granados for engineering and production. And thank you, the viewer or listener, however you are taking in this content. We appreciate your support. If you're watching on YouTube, please be sure to like and subscribe. And we'll catch you later in the week with our Week in Review program on Friday. Until then, keep watching your world.